This tape is produced in the spirit of AA's 12th step to carry the message. Members of the fellowship should bear in mind AA's 11th tradition regarding anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films in the use of this tape. Anonymity to this extent is actually the practice of genuine humility. We're sure that humility expressed by anonymity is the greatest safeguard that AA could ever have.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Karen. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I'm really grateful to be here tonight. I want to thank Kathy, our coordinator. She's also my mother. A lot of people know that. And when she asked me to do it, I said yes, of course, because anytime somebody asks me to do something in service, I always say yes. Because if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous and being sober, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I just want to thank all the other ladies and men on the committee for welcoming me and, you know, all the hard work they've done, because they did a wonderful job. You know, it was a lot of work. The speaker tonight is somebody that I really respect. I met him in January. He spoke at somebody else's anniversary, and I just thought he had a lot of hope. There's a lot of sobriety. You know, he just celebrated this last few months ago, 36 years, and I was a lot. And I always wonder, you know, like how old I'm going to be if I have that many years of sobriety, but I know it's one day at a time. And I just like his attitude. He's very positive, and that's what I want, you know. I know everything comes in time. And I guess to share his experience, strength, and hope tonight is John D. from Franklin Square.
Thank you, Karen. Good evening, everybody. My name is John Dolly, and I am an alcoholic. I want to congratulate Discovery 79.
97.
Usually I say, after I identify myself, I'm here because I'm not all there. I want to thank them for asking me to be part of this special occasion. Last night, I heard Alatine. I heard Melissa again. I had the privilege of sharing a meeting with her. And it's mind-boggling. It's really mind-boggling. Without getting emotional, I want to thank everybody that's here tonight to allow me to share my experience, strength, and hope. Because when I walked into the doors of AA, that's what they told me. If I don't give it away, I'm not going to hold on to it. And this is the one of the ways that I do that. Anyway, I'm going to tell you a little bit about before, during, and after. I'm the oldest of five. Both my parents came from Ireland, God rest their souls. And I was born in the Bronx, where all the Irish went in them days. And then I was raised in Yorkville, 90th Street and 3rd Avenue. And I got a few here. And growing up, like I say, I have one sister underneath me. And underneath her was another brother who died of this disease, of pill abuse and alcoholism. And under him was another brother that was mentally retarded from birth. And under him is my youngest brother, who hasn't drank in a few years. And my sister could take a drink or leave it. And that's about the size of that. My father started drinking when he was 35, and at the age of 63, he died of the disease of alcoholism. And it wasn't pretty. He was found dead in the apartment at 90th and 3rd Avenue, a couple of days dead, and, you know, this is the disease. And my mother, God rest her soul, she died at the age of 42, and I was 14. I was the oldest, and my sister was underneath me, and we became, I guess, the mom and dad. And I grew up in an alcoholic household. In the neighborhood I came from, there was a lot of drinking. We lived in a railroad flat. The Third Avenue well was still up when I was a little guy. And, you know, it was an ash shaft, and underneath the ash shaft was Keen and Fury's Bar and Grill, and that's where you heard 3 o'clock in the morning the Irish songs. You know, the rebel songs, the good Irish songs. And about 4 o'clock the chairs were flying, and you knew everybody was having a good time. Many a time I had to go. My father had a little grocery store, and, you know, he lost that business through the use and abuse of alcohol. Many a time I had to go take him home, and when he had a Jekyll and Hyde personality, and when he came home, he didn't know what was going to happen. And there was many a time everybody may believe they were asleep or what have you. So anyway, I swore if I ever drank, I'd never drink like this man. Growing up, I didn't know if I loved him or hated him. I made my confirmation, changed my clothes, and went to work in the store delivering orders. You know, there was a lot of things. There was a few times we were together, and when he was sober, he was very quiet. Anyway, like I say, 16, I picked the beer up. I was down in my father's store cleaning the cellar. And I had about 6 warm beers. I got physically sick, and I blacked out. And the next thing I remember, I was drinking black coffee. And the next thing I remember, I was up in my room. I shared a room with my brother. I had one bed on one side, and his was on the other. And I can remember the room spinning and looking at the old-fashioned light bulb and swearing I was on a roller coaster and saying, never again. And for the next 10 years, I was to say, never again, many, many times. And you know, it continued on. The neighborhood we came from was German, Irish, Italian. And we went, you know, we grouped up. And 17, 18, there was a sugar bowl on one side of the street, on the east side. And we'd meet our gals or the crowd. We'd go in there and listen to songs, have coffee or Cokes. And at 10:30, 11 o'clock them days, the girls went home. They didn't come out to spend the night, you know. So from 10:30, 11 o'clock, then we crossed the other side of the street where the bars were. And we, you know, we experimented with beer and what have you. And, you know, before long, 17, 17 and a half, there was parties. Everybody chips in a couple of bucks. We go down to Joey Steinhauer's house and listen to the Ink Spots and Glenn Miller, and a few girls will be there. And, you know, with a few beers in me, I could dance better. I could try a lot of things better. You know, the courage. And from there, like I say, around 18, I guess, 17, 18, I started keeping company with the gal I married. And this gal lived on the other side of 3rd Avenue between 3rd and Lex. And she was of Italian extraction. And, you know, in our home, there was a lot of love. And her father was dead at the time. Her brother, I think, was in Korea. And her mother, my mother-in-law, God rest her soul, was a little Italian woman who spoke 3 words of English. How are you? Blah, 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 blah. And a beautiful woman. And we kept company. Eventually, we got engaged. And I think that was around around 20 years of age. But, you know, she'd be home at 10:30, and I'd go out and do my thing. And in a short period of time, the weekend drinking was becoming Mondays. And I didn't drink every day. But once I took that drink, whether it be beer, whiskey, wine, what have you, it took me. It changed me. It changed my mind. I want a bar. The compulsion set in. I don't believe in my particular case there was an indivisible line at all. I think I was just like a time bomb waiting to go off. And I fought it. And I fought the denial and everything else. And I tried different ways to drink. You know, and you go into the bars after a while, you become friendly with these bartenders. and they are God. You know, you make a confession to them. You borrow money from them. You tell them when you get sick. You tell them about the lousy girlfriend that don't understand you. You know, and they told me, why don't you eat before you drink? Because once I drank, I didn't eat. Who needs to eat? There's plenty of nourishment in beer, hops and this and that. And I tried that. And that only accomplished more to throw up, to get rid of. And I tried olive oil in the glass. You know, these are the prices you pay to drink. And nobody twisted my arm. I drank because I wanted to. And again, I wasn't going to be like my father. And it got worse. And I got worse. And I tried to blame it on the circumstances of my life. I quit school at 16. I didn't go to high school. And as I look back, there was a lot of self-pity in me. When my mother died, my higher power, who I choose to call God, I closed the door on him. Because when she was laying in a coma, I asked him, please, don't take my mother. And I won't do this, and I won't do that, you know. And I'll tell the priest everything when I go to confession. And she went. And it was Good Friday. And I think that was a turning point. Anyway, like I said, I met this gal, and we went out, and we were going together, I guess, 4 years, 5 years. And we got engaged. And then at the age of 22, I got married. But what I was trying to say is, before this, I was living with this brother of mine in 94th Street and 3rd Avenue. And the bathroom was in the hall. And when we got engaged, I got this apartment. It was $19 a month because I was going to save money to get married. And the first thing I did was put a refrigerator in there so I could have my beer at home. See, I wouldn't go to the bars. And I was going to save money. And the fact of the matter was, I couldn't save nothing because I'd bring my, you know, on a light night, I'd bring 5 quarts of Schaefer home. 5 quarts. After 3 quarts, I'm thinking, who's in the bar? You know, by 4 quarts, I always left one for later. I go down and see who's there. And, you know, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. It was no work. It was another drunk. And anyway, I was living there, and I had come off this drunk, and I was, you know, coming off the drunks were little hard-boiled eggs, you know, a little something in the stomach, a little jello, a little broth, and I was getting back in shape. And a week later, I hear voices. Holy Jesus. And my brother was sleeping. At that time, he was just starting to drink, and I'm waking, Jimmy, they're chasing me. Jimmy, get the hell out of here. Let me sleep. And I run it all over, and, you know, I can laugh now, but it wasn't funny at the time. And I said, you hear the music? And I went down to Metropolitan Hospital about 3 o'clock in the morning. I saw a doctor, I guess a psychiatrist. She said to me, do you drink? I said, occasionally, but I hadn't been drinking. And she says, go home, take a physic, stay in the house, everything will be all right. Now, maybe 3 weeks later, I'm still on a wagon. I go into Mike O'Donnell, my other bartender, my friend, and I explain the story to him. He said, well, you should know better. You never stop cold. You take the raw. So I was drinking a Coke, and I'm looking at the taps, and I'm thinking, should I or shouldn't I? I had a little bit of fear. And then after a while, I said, Mike, give me a beer. My beers were about a dime then. And he poured one, and I looked at the glass, and I sipped it. Maybe the only one I ever sipped in my life. And nothing happened. I said, Mike, do it again. And it was getting better. And by the third beer, I forgot it ever happened. And, you know, I went on my ways. And like I say, we got engaged. And my wife knew I drank. I don't think to the extent of my drinking. The engagement ring was another thing. You know, we went out to buy it. Made me a combat engineer. Pick and shovel, I knew nothing about. I had to go down to Fort Leonard Wood to learn that. And I had no trouble. I got all my teeth fixed because half of them were knocked out on 3rd Avenue when I went in. And I came home 4 months later like King Kong. I was physically in good shape. I had all my choppers, nice black curly. I was a good-looking sucker. And I felt great. In the meantime, I'm writing my honey, and I'm telling her everything's good. And I was going to make up. I have 14-day leave before going to Germany. And again, I was sincere. But once I hit 86th Street, Lexington Avenue, got off the subway, walked to 93rd Avenue, and there was two bars on the corner, O'Donnell's and McLaughlin's. I forgot about going home. I had to stop in O'Donnell's. It was in the afternoon. And I figure everybody's going to see me at that time, my Eisenhower uniform, and they're all going to say, come on, have a drink, have a drink, have a drink. I walked in, there was 4 or 5 guys at the bar with their head down. They didn't know I left, they could care less. I owed the bartender money, I paid him, and then I went up to the wife. We had a few good days together, and the rest was another drunk, another disaster, another waking up with the guilt, the remorse, the never agains. And again, my wife, glad to see me go. She re-hocked the stuff. She took it out of hock. I gave her the tickets back where I put it back in. I'm going to Germany. I'm not going to need it. What a sickness. And I went to Germany again, coming off a drunk and thinking to myself, I'm going to do the right thing. And by the time I got to Germany, I met a few guys from Brooklyn. Somebody said, let's go try the German beer. We did. I got drunk. I couldn't handle American beer. Now I'm messing with the heavy stuff. I don't remember coming back to the Blitz. I remember the next morning, the guy underneath me wanted to beat the hell out of me because my kidneys got wet. I didn't know where the bathroom was. And believe me, I was no fighter by this time. I was a talker. And I talked my way out of it, and I went down to Nuremberg, and where I was to spend the next 18 months in Uncle Sam's army. And over there, right away, I gravitated towards the guys that drank like me, the smart money. And they told me, you make rank, not because of making rank, to stay out of jail. Now, that made sense. So they told me, you get jammed up, you PFC, they'll take the strike. They'll give you 14 days at extra duty. And that's what happened over there. I had maybe one or two legitimate passes. And the rest were over the fence. Going out was easy because I was sober. Coming back, I don't know which way to come in. I was blind drunk. One time I walked in the main gate, and I thought I was in the back gate. Another time I stood in front of the company commander. He says, you know why you're here? I said, no, sir. He says, you were out one without a pass, and you shouldn't get caught. Two, the MPs picked you up urinating on a German police car. And again, it was cleaning toilets, cleaning bathrooms, restricted to pulse. That didn't stop me. I went and drank on pulse. I went off pulse. Anyway, 6 months before I was due to come home, I was out in the field up on the border, up around Hof. And it was an alert. We had to go out and set up. And I was supposed to be a demolition expert. Now, believe me, folks, I wouldn't go near a socket to put two wires in. But to get ranked, they had to put me in this MOS. And once we got set up, I had nothing to do. Some beer come into the area. I started drinking. I got drunk. And the next thing, I'm in the town of Hof and AWOL. And now they grab me, and they're sick and tired of my crap. And they hit me with a special court martial. Now I'm walked, there's a gunner in my back. And I feel, what happened? And comes time of the court martial, and there's a table like this with 5 officers, and the guy before me goes away for 6 months at hard labor, basically for doing the same thing I did. And all of a sudden I think of God, please get me out of this. I'll never do it again. And the NCOs in the outfit, they got up and spoke on my behalf. And they described me like this. Sober, this man is A1. Once he picks a drink up, he's uncontrollable. And what happened was I got busted, I got fined, and restricted to Pulse. And I went back to the barracks, and now I'm off the hook, so to speak. And I'm sitting there, and I think, God, after all I went through, I could use a drink. That's the insanity. Anyway, I drank on Pulse. I got jammed up a little bit, but I got out with an honorable discharge, and I come home to the wife. And by this time, she had an apartment in the Bronx, all painted, five nice rooms up in Bainbridge Avenue. And coming back, everything was going to be different. Again, the promises to myself. And because before, we're living with my mother-in-law, and you know, there was no privacy. And my mother-in-law was a beautiful woman. Never bothered us. And I go into this apartment all set up, and again, I came back, and I got a job in the grocery business, which I was in. Walked in off the street for Dyke Shopwell up there, and I got hired. And I didn't drink for 3 months. And right away, I had a career ahead of me. Because when we don't drink, we're good. You do a day's work. You do what you're told. You follow directions. She was happy. I was happy. Everything was going great. She was working. And after 3 months, I picked the beer up. It led to a drunk. It led to the loss of that job and the career, whatever. In and out of jobs. No money. Coming home at all different hours. And little by little, crucifying the love that was between us. Whatever love. She broke out in hives. And it was nerves. I didn't hit her physically. Mentally, I crucified her. She didn't know what the hell she had here. There was times coming off these drunks where I wasn't able to take a shower from the being so weak. And yet, waking up some mornings or afternoons, whatever the hell it was, not knowing what day it was, what it was night, and thinking to myself, if I get out, I'm going to drink. And by this time, I was drinking a day at a time. Everything revolved around a drink. When I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about the next time. And God forgive me, but if my wife had had problems and laid on the floor dying, and there was a bottle of Jack Daniels on the other side of her, I would go for the bottle first. That's where booze took me. There was a hate within me for what I had become, because I certainly didn't start out this way. My last drunk was in April. Prior to that, what happened was my brother-in-law came up, and there was a big confrontation in the house, and my wife told me, get the hell out, I had enough of you. And this was around 1960. And I went down to my brother to live with him, to the old neighborhood, and I thought, everything is great now. Now I can do what I want. And when I was down there about 3 weeks, I wanted to get back up to the Bronx where I was taking care of the clean sheets, the clean drawers, you know. Somebody give me a couple of dollars in the morning to go get a job. So she says, you can come back if you go to AA. And I went to my first meeting in Bronx County. And I didn't condemn it or condone it. I wasn't ready. I went up there. I went to that meeting to get back into the house. Now, in April of 1961, I was ready. I come home after drinking a week or so, whatever it was, and my wife and sister were at the door. There was AA literature in the house, and I can remember I wanted to wreck the place. I can remember picking a hammer up. I wanted to do a job on the furniture, and my wife being there, and I think I raised it above her head. And the next thing I remember getting up in the middle of the night, shaking a pot, looking for dentures in the ashtrays. And my mind racing and trying to drink a cup of coffee. And to get my mind off myself, I picked up this famous test. You know, the questions. Are you an alcoholic? I got nearly 100. The next morning, I said to my wife and sister, I'm going to AA. Nobody jumped up and down with joy because there was many promises I made. But I guess I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And as I look back today, that night coming in. My spiritual awakening was my wife, the picture that I saw that night. She was nailed to the cross and I did it. All through my drinking. And I didn't do it physically. Anyway, I went down. I got a list of the meetings in the Bronx. I think it was around Thursday. And I was to go to Tallentine that night. And I came home and told her. And I went to Tallentine. I saw AA on a church. And I said, man, I ain't going. Suppose somebody sees me going down there. What are they going to think of this classy guy? And I didn't go. And, you know, back in, I didn't drink. Came Tuesday, I went to the Vet Space 81, Kingsbridge Road, the Veterans Hospital. They had an open meeting. It was an 8 o'clock meeting, and I walked in there, and there wasn't too many young guys in them days. And there was a guy at the door with his hand out. He said, my name is Artie, what's yours? And as I look back today, there was my Bill Wilson. There was my higher power. There was the messenger. And I told him, he said, how come you're here? I said, because I might have a problem with drinking. He says, let me tell you something. You're here for a wife, you're here for a job, you're here for a handout, or anything else other than drinking, go back out and finish it. Because the only thing we're going to promise you is how to stay away from picking up the first drink one day at a time. And you know, I look back, I was willing to settle for that. I admit it. And he talked to me, and after he talked to me, he told me a little bit about himself, and he told me a lot about me, and I thought, who the hell are you to talk to me like this? But he was telling me the truth. He put his phone number on a piece of paper and gave it to me. Underneath, he puts, before. So what are you talking about, before? Before you pick a drink up, you call me. And after we talk, if you still want a drink, go drink. So, and he also told me, he said, look, 10 years, you could, by yourself, you could put 3 months together, staying away from a drink. He said, but that's all. He says, here, we'll show you how to do it one day at a time. And he had 10 or 12 years. And I walked in there that night hopeless. And I saw a hope in him, and I drew some of that. And I left there hopeless. And I found out I had a disease. And I found out I had to put my sobriety first. Now I come home to my little Italian beauty and I say, honey, my sobriety comes first. Ahead of me? Thank God they had open meetings. And we went to open meetings and she started to understand a little bit. And before I knew, I had a week. And this guy is calling me, and I'm shining shoes to take my mind off things. And they told me about the big book. They said, you go to the library and get one. I think I wanted my wife to go in and get it. I was afraid that, you know, somebody would see me there. Sick. And I thought there was only one problem here. A little physically, I was, you know, in bad shape. Mentally and spiritually, I was fine. Well... And he told me, you know, like I say, it became, he says, you got to join a group, become part of something. He says, when you drink, you're always looking to be part of the crowd, part of the action. You're never part of nothing. He says, here, you join a group, you get into it, you become part of. He says, so when you find a group you're comfortable with, he says, in fact, join this group. I said, okay. And already I was listening to what he was telling me. And I hung on to him like a baby hangs on to a mother, you know. And he told me, you know, before you walk, you crawl. Easy does it. First things first. Think. Tolerance. Live and let live. These, to me, are the banister or the steps. The serenity prayer. And then he showed me the famous shades. So take the first step. I saw them. I thought of 10 commandments. I said, what the hell is this? Because I don't want to hear anything about God. God did this to me. Little did I know it was the gift. From that day to this night, I haven't had to drink. Because on a daily basis, I get up in the morning, I become willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. And I choose not to drink. And what happened to me? You know what happened after a short period of time? I start eating bacon and eggs in the morning. Woo! I start drinking coffee and not getting sick. The wife wasn't smiling. Not for a long time, boy. She made me pay. Five and a half months later, Uncle Sam calls me back in the Army, the time of the Berlin crisis. And this isn't fair. Doesn't he know I'm in AA? So up I go to Fort Devens. Talk right away when I got the notice. I thought about drinking, but I called Artie. Don't worry about it. Come over tonight. We'll talk about it. We sat down at a round table with the group. And these guys are smart guys. They says on their questionnaire, it says, do you do any excessive drinking? Maybe you should check yes, John. Let them know. In case you pick up, you can get out in the medical. Now, that made sense. So I go up to Fort Devens. I get in the service again. And everybody in the truck seemed to have a bottle. Have a drink. I don't drink. Have a drink. I don't drink. Now, the third time, I'm thinking, they're all down in the Bronx. I'm up here. Who's going to know? They hit me, you stupid, and you're going to pay the price. And that's when I accepted. Now, the short period in the Army there, with the program, using the program, and that's a serenity prayer, the slogans, the big book of my Foot Locker, telephone, made a few meetings up there. I'd done 10 months. I got a high school diploma equivalency. I came out with an extra stripe. And things were looking good, and I was feeling good. I come home, and everything between me and Honey is pretty good. And Artie says to me, go on a vacation to Florida. I said, I can't afford this. I can't. I got no money. He says, if you were to pick a drink up and go on a drunk, could you afford it? He had me. So I'd done what I was told. I went to Florida. Went down to Miami. We had a beautiful, one of the first of the solo vacations. And time went on, and I got better, little at a time. And I'd run to Artie, and I'd run to this guy and that guy, and Tom Campbell, God rest his soul, Gene McKenna, Joe Smonda. All these guys were there, Jack Brennan. And, you know, I tell him, Jack, but you don't understand. Did you drink today? No, I'll see you tomorrow. Come here. This too shall pass. Please, don't tell me this crap. Don't you know I want? Not realizing what I had. Now, it's all about change. Coming in here, I was willing to let everything go and start over. And that's what I had to do. In 1963, my wife became pregnant. And that was a blessing. It was a gift. It wasn't from the lack of trying on my part. We had a little Italian doctor one time. I was talking to him because I figured something was wrong with me. The great me. He says, let me tell you something. Don't try so hard. Give it a rest. Let it get strong. We had a baby girl. And that girl has never seen me with a drink. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And and because of trying to be the best father I could, sober. Not always, you know, the right. I made mistakes. But I'm in a program that tells me I'm responsible for the effort. I'm not here. We strive for perfection. I got this, my wife sitting here. We're married 40 years, and today there's a love. There's a companionship. There's an understanding. There's an openness. Because I'm sober, and I try to apply the 12 principles of alcoholics in my life. I ran to Artie and says, you know that Italian, she doesn't understand, I'm sober, God damn her. He says, hey, do you treat her like you treat the woman, the women in the rooms? No, when's the last time you bought her a box of candy? When's the last time you took her out? Why don't you try it? You know, and it was hard because we'd have a fight and I wasn't going to give in. Then it was war, you know, but she always won. You know, she always won. And I won't get into why, but, you know. And this girl of mine got bigger. I'm going to wrap this up quick. She grew. She grew. I was there for it when she was in the Girl Scouts. Then we bought a home out here in Franklin Square. And I tell Artie, look what I did. And he says, look at the house I got. He says, not a house, a home, Johnny. And she made a communion. She made a confirmation. I was there for her. You know, she had problems. I could listen. She went out on the first date. I was by the damn window. What are they doing in the car? Because I think everybody's like me, an animal. And, you know, I'm powerless over that. She met a guy she got married to. And he had to ask me to take her hand. I made him sweat. The benefits. And he's a good man. He works hard. And then she... my daughter gave birth to my first grandson, and she named him after me. And then 2 years later, another one came. 2 years later, another one came. All boys. And now on June 28th, she gave birth to a girl. And to close, you know, there's no end to the benefits and the gifts of being sober. We went to the hospital, and my daughter had sections on all of these, and she was in bed. And my wife was holding my granddaughter. And I stood on the side of the bed by my daughter, and I kissed her, told her I loved her. And I looked at my wife holding our granddaughter, and I looked at my little girl who just gave birth. His granddaughter, and I was overwhelmed with a happiness and a peace that comes with doing the best I can on a daily basis. I went back to Ireland and saw where my parents came from and realized they'd done the best they could from where they came from in sobriety, because I carried a resentment and a hate for my father for years and finally let it go. And I didn't. I had to realize that love the person, hate the action. And today, like I say, it's never ending. I came here this weekend, and this is another mark in my sobriety of what we, first word and the first step, can do together, what I can't do alone. I'm no further away from a drink tonight as I stand here than I was some 36 years ago. Because I'm an arm's reach away. And I must stay in this fellowship. I must see the newcomer in, coming in the door, and remember where I came from. I must have the old timer. I must have the women. There's a lot of wisdom that women gave me in these rooms. And together we all seem to work it out. I need to see the guy and gal that's going back and forth, beating their head against the wall. Because there, but for the grace of God, go I. If everybody came in like me and got it in the first shot, there'd be nobody sitting here tonight. So I thank God. I thank AA. And tonight I thank Al-Anon and Al-Anon team. God bless you all.